I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning, and welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB, here weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock. This is where you will find the stories behind the stories, the less reported stuff in the mainstream media, the truth behind the headlines, the lying mainstream media, and the ridiculous two-party propaganda. This is Central Mississippi's safe little space here for independent thinkers. We think on our own here. I actually listened to another syndicated national talk show host yesterday, just kind of doing a little channel surfing during a commercial break on WYAB, and boy, I got to tell you, I used to listen to Talking Points Radio. I would take in just enough. The subjects covered are maybe a mile wide, but always about an inch deep, and the propaganda on both sides of the vast majority of programming out there is really amazing to me. I listened to it, and you know, the mainstream media, I would say, probably gets you about a sixth grade education on most issues. This includes Fox News. I may give Fox News an eighth grade education, maybe on basic, the way things work. But, you know, we have to understand that majority of Americans aren't going to be real deep thinkers on issues that are really important. It gets you kind of the broad strokes. If you listen to some talk radio, I mean, you get up to a 10th grade degree. You'll get a little deeper into some issues, but boy, the simple narratives that come out of things that, and this is both sides. Yeah, I listen to some liberal talk radio, liberal YouTube channels, because I'm curious to know what they say. My favorite are the ones like the Jimmy Dore show with this guy who's just pretty much a radical progressive. I would disagree with him on 95% of political things, but boy, he calls out the Democratic Party. He's led a movement on the left to the point where he's been silenced too, certainly not invited on any of the major networks, but he's sees right through the corruption of the Clintons and as she's running for president. Now, Jimmy Dore is a Bernie Sanders fan, but at least he's got a core ideology. You know, he is a progressive and he believes in free education and Medicare for all and all of these socialist utopia ideals. But at the very least, he can at least spot the corruption on his side and call out the establishment on the Democratic side. So you're not supposed to do that. Usually you're supposed to play the game. You're only supposed to point to the other side. Anyway, what we've got here for a couple hours today and on many of the WYAB programming is to raise your knowledge, get a little deeper into some topics. And we're going to do that next hour. We've got Aaron Rice coming in from the Mississippi Justice Institute. Mississippi Justice Institute is one of these organizations. They are the guys in the trenches in Mississippi fighting absurd job-killing regulations and the things that kill economic progress here in our state. And we certainly don't need anything standing in our way in Mississippi. So they are trying to, you know, they file lawsuits, anything to get the free market moving in Mississippi. And so I'm big fans of their group and the Mississippi Center for Public Policy that they are a part of, too. So he's got a story today of them tackling some of these bizarre regulations that will certainly raise some eyebrows. We'll spend the first hour today just kind of taking a look at the news. There's headline out today. An autopsy report found that Jeffrey Epstein had endured multiple breaks in his neck bones, deepening the mystery surrounding his death last week. Among the bones broken in Epstein's neck was the hyoid? Am I saying that right? Hyoid bone. Hyoid bone, which in men is near the Adam's apple. These breaks can occur in those who hang themselves, particularly if they are older, according to forensics experts and studies on the subject, but they are more common in victims of homicide by strangulation. Even Jonathan L. Arden, president of the National Association of Medical Examiners, admitted that a hyoid break is more commonly associated with homicidal strangulation than suicidal hanging. Now, this proves really nothing. It's enough for a lot of us to hang our hats on that say this was an awfully convenient death. And it does kind of explain the reports of shrieking coming from the cell. I also, you know, wonder when you're talking about hanging yourself with bed sheets, it doesn't seem to be as high a pressure thing. You know, it's kind of a disbursement of pressure on your neck. Might not be as bone crushing as something that is smaller and stronger. But this will prove nothing. We will never know the truth of exactly what happened to Jeffrey Epstein, up to and including the fact that many people say, oh, he just bugged out. They got him out of there. Witness protection. You got to think that Jeffrey Epstein had a dead man switch somewhere. It's the only reason they would attempt to keep him alive. That they wouldn't kill Jeffrey Epstein would be some mechanism that he may have put in himself that said, if anything happens to me, this goes out. That would be the only reason to keep him alive. You would think that he would have that. But also the possibility exists that we are going to see somebody in the prison who was currently serving life without parole that had nothing to lose. Maybe family or friends or privileges in the prison got him on the side of murder. He went into the cell and took care of Jeffrey Epstein while the guards were sleeping. And that would wrap it up in a nice little bow. Of course, whoever this inmate is, if he was convinced to go in and kill this guy, they told him, you know, this is probably going to come out. We're probably going to have to trot you out there as a killer. And you can go out and look like a good guy, say you just couldn't stand, you know, a pedophile in the prison, so you took him out. So people will have some sympathy for you. We'll give you some privileges. We'll pay whatever. The problem is that when you make that deal, you won't be long for this world because, as they say, the only way two people can keep a secret is if one of them is dead. So anyway, interesting things going on in Epstein. They are looking for Ghislaine Maxwell, who was the madam of the operation. Took her quite a while to do this. She was named in the lawsuits and in the original complaints about this back in 2005, I believe. But if it took the FBI 6 weeks to get to Little Jeff's Pedo Island down there, then I guess it's going to take about 20 years for them to actually detain and question Ghislaine Maxwell, or Ghislaine, I guess is the way they pronounce it, Ghislaine Maxwell, on her role in this. It is absolutely stunning and something that leads me to believe, as Alexander Acosta said during his vetting for becoming part of the Trump administration as labor secretary, they asked him about the light sentence on Jeffrey Epstein and what his, I'm paraphrasing a tiny bit here, but what he said was that, well, I was told to back off of Jeffrey Epstein, that he was above my pay grade because he was part of intelligence. Meaning that he was part of, he was running an intelligence operation. It sounds to me, Ghislaine Maxwell's father was a known Mossad agent. That is the Israeli intelligence agency. So that may be why she has flittered about the countryside and was most recently seen, I think, on a Maine. Was it in Maine? She was living in a $3.5 million mansion up off the coast of Maine. With somebody else, and of course she has yet to be questioned. The whole thing just really stinks to high heaven. We haven't heard the end of it, but we will never hear the truth of it. We'll talk and we come back. Stock market took a dive yesterday. Looks like it has rebounded a little bit today. It was down sharply before the market opened today. It popped because China made some kind of conciliatory statement. Trump then made another statement, which was not so conciliatory, and it went back down again. The China trade war seems to be driving a lot of the market action. But Trump went on the attack on Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell again. I'm going to read these tweets, just see what you think about it. People across conservative media are telling you that the economy is humming along, never been better in the history of the United States. But I got to tell you, there seems like there's some big cracks showing. I'll be right back.
We're coming to your town. We'll help you rally your town. If you need an experienced lawyer that you can trust, contact the law firm of Danks, Miller, and Corey. Our lawyers represent clients and small businesses across Mississippi. With over 100 years of combined legal experience, we have the expertise to handle even the most complex legal matters. When you need a lawyer to fight for you, don't compromise. Call Danks, Miller, and Corey. You can reach us at 601-957-3101, 601-957-3101, or online at danksmillercorey.com.
I certainly make no secret of the fact that I don't understand our worship of politicians in our society. We seem to realize instinctually, and I mean, just intuitively, we know they've let us down. People are mostly dissatisfied with, I think Congress's approval rating stands at a high of around 12%, and sometimes substantially lower, maybe high single digits for that. There's just certain politicians, though, I don't get. Most of them are on the Democratic side. Anybody who is attracted to Warren, Elizabeth Warren's, even her speaking style, it comes across as very phony to me. The headline is that she drew hundreds to some of her rallies in New Hampshire, really talking about the fact that the crowds are really turning out for Elizabeth Warren. I think she might have had one crowd of 700 people, and Bernie Sanders had a crowd of 600 people, and I think Trump is poised to do a campaign stop up there, which I would imagine we'll see 10,000 plus. That will be ignored. But there is another politician on the Republican side that I just have never understood. You get a gut reaction to people. At least I do. And this is one I've always had a real rejection of. And that's Marco Rubio. Are there still Marco Rubio fans out there? I know several people who really supported him in the primaries before Trump dispatched with him. They're big Marco Rubio fans. Now, I do, outside of just finding him very off-putting, he's a huge warmonger, an absolute warmonger. And I have zero respect for that because he's not signing up to go fight, but he's certainly willing to send our kids to fight and die halfway around the world for any little thing. Marco Rubio on the Jeffrey Epstein stuff. This is his tweet. Putin bots and trolls are aggressively pushing hashtags on social media promoting Trump and Clinton conspiracies about Epstein's death. It's sad and frightening to see so many Americans on both sides of the partisan, unwittingly helping them. Putin has weaponized our polarization. See, this is Marco Rubio telling you you are an idiot. If you don't believe this was just a suicide of some crazed pedophile, if you're pushing any of these conspiracy theories that he was possibly murdered, you are just doing the bidding of Vladimir Putin. This is Marco Rubio. He was running for president of the United States. You know, we talk about the left's just absolute derangement when it comes to the theories about Russian collusion, Russians hacking our elections, the Russians are the reason that Trump is in the White House. This is in a lot of circles on the Republican Party, too. Marco Rubio being just one example of it. But there's plenty of hysteria over on Fox News about those dastardly Russians and how aggressive they are around the world. I do not get the Marco Rubio thing at all. If you're a Marco Rubio fan, maybe you can explain it to me. Yesterday, the stock market took a 800-point dive. This was on swapped headlines about the China trade war, and also particularly that the 10-year bond, we had an inverted yield curve yesterday, which shows typically, it's not always the case, but it's a pretty good flashing sign for the fact that there is a recession ahead. In reaction to that, Donald Trump took to Twitter, and here is his tweet. We are winning big time against China. Companies and jobs are fleeing. Prices to us have not gone up and in some cases have come down. China is not our problem, though Hong Kong is not helping. Our problem is with the Fed. Raised too much and too fast. Now too slow to cut. Spread is way too much as other countries say thank you to clueless Jay Powell and the Federal Reserve. Germany and many others are playing the game. Yeah, I'll talk about Germany in a second. Crazy inverted yield curve. That's all caps, exclamation point. We should easily be reaping big rewards and gains, but the Fed is holding us back. We will win, exclamation point. Now, this to me stands in stark contrast to the guy I voted for. This is a 2011 tweet from Donald Trump. Quote, "The Fed's reckless policies of low interest and flooding the market with dollars needs to be stopped or we will face record inflation." The Fed's reckless policies of low interest and flooding the market with dollars needs to be stopped or we will face record inflation. That was Donald Trump in 2011. In 2019, his tweet says, "Our problem is with the Fed, raised too much and too fast, now too slow to cut." You know, Donald Trump was right on about the economy, really was, up to January 20th, 2017 at 9:37 a.m. I don't know what happened, but then that's when he started taking credit for everything. Statistics that were bogus under Obama, low interest rates were catastrophic under Obama. They needed to be raised, according to Donald Trump, and he was right. The zero interest rate policy that we had for so long was just absolutely devastating. We'll see the effects of that soon. But these bad numbers, these bogus numbers, these statistics designed to make politicians just look good, suddenly became all real. They were great numbers, and they were real numbers, and that happened on January 20th of 2017. And I've since said, this is his reversal on this was an absolute huge mistake to own this economy. And I ask people this, too. Now, I know I can be accused of Trump bashing, but it's just when I think one of our employees deserves some criticism. You do understand he's one of your employees, right? They all are. We don't really like to think of it that way because it's much easier to kind of put the people like that have risen above us and become our overlords on some level of a pedestal. But in the United States, we're supposed to view these people as representatives of ours. It's essentially as if you were a business owner and you sent someone to negotiate something, somebody that works for you, a manager of your business, but you're the business owner. So when one of my employees says something that I disagree with, I think it's perfectly normal to call them out for it. We all have friends. Now, when the stock market is going up, Donald Trump takes credit for all of that. And I believe he's been a net positive on the economy, all the predictions of a stock market crash if Trump was elected. I never understood that. I never understood why this business guy would cause the stock market to actually go down, yet a Hillary Clinton victory would cause the market to go up. That never made sense to me prior to the election, but of course we saw what happened after the election. The markets went up and have continued to go up. Now, if you look at charts of many things, the stock market or job numbers or anything, if you look at charts and you don't know when Donald Trump was elected, it's pretty difficult to tell where Obama's term ended and Donald Trump started. Not to say that Trump doesn't have some benefits to the economy, and I do believe that he wishes that that would be his legacy. But gosh, I wish he would have been honest with the American people and told us what he had to untangle. Because here's the sad thing. If there is a crash in the stock market, if we continue to see weakness in the market, and the last couple of weeks have been pretty brutal, if we can continue to see that and there is a financial crisis, it will not be Donald Trump's fault. Even if the China trade war does not resolve itself and becomes a drag on the economy and does help put us into recession, the structural problems within our economy from 30, 40 years, really 100 years, but last 30, 40 years of this debt binge after coming off the gold standard, the problems are so systemic, but Trump will be blamed for it. He will be blamed for it because he is the one that stamped his name on it on January 20th of 2017 at 9:37 a.m. He took this economy and said, "It's mine," and he took credit for everything on the way up. Whenever there's a bad economic number or a bad stock market day, he blames the Fed. Now, the Fed is the reason that the stock market is even where it is right now. They've been pumping phony, fake money, loading us up on tons of cheap debt since the depths of the financial crisis. Yes, Obama benefited from that. And yes, the stock market gains during the Obama years was largely driven by this low interest rate. Now, I don't give Barack Obama any credit for the economy. that he presided over during his time. He came in. I mean, he was a beneficiary of timing. He came in essentially at the lows with the mess that was created or began to appear, I guess, better way to put it, at the end of the Bush administration, and then started early in his. He had basically nowhere to go up, and the Fed obliged him by cutting rates and flooding the economy with a bunch more debt that levitated the stock market and anemically pulled the economy out of recession. But if you have a friend who takes credit for all of the good things and blames all the bad things, I mean, I got to tell you, I run across people like this. And when you're in, you've probably had people like this in your office or in your friend group or whatever. What do you do when you hear them take credit for something when it's things go good, and when things go bad, they blame somebody else? We all collectively roll our eyes at these people out in society. And I have the same eye roll for Donald Trump when he does this stuff. You cannot take all of the credit and none of the blame, or not admit any weakness to anything that's going on. The China trade war is a drag on our economy. It's okay. It's okay if this accomplishes great things down the road. It may well be worth it. There's headlines out there right now that even say farmers are sticking with Donald Trump to a degree. I think it was 57% of farmers polled said they're with the president. They know that he thinks that they'll get him that he will get them a better deal down the road. So they're willing to tough it out. And some farmers are not with this. They're being hurt very badly by this trade war. But that's okay. To pretend that the China trade war doesn't have any effect on anything. It's all good. We're all winning. China's paying, you know, Trump a couple of days ago, I didn't get to it, other news, but he walked back his threat of tariffs that were, I think, set to take place maybe September 1st. And he said, well, we've decided to not implement these tariffs then out of consideration for the American consumer heading into Christmas. We, just in case there's some possibility that Americans would have to pay higher prices going into Christmas, we don't want to do that, so they're delaying the tariffs until December. Now, how do we juxtapose that to the idea that China pays all of the tariffs anyway, that it never has any effect on the American consumer? Basic rules of economics say that just cannot be so. Yet, we're supposed to believe both things. This is the frustration to me. This is why it's difficult. I was out eating with a couple last night, and they said, well, you know, how's the show going? You know, what's going on in the show right now? And I told them, I said, it's very difficult. I'm talking to the state of Mississippi, which is solidly behind Donald Trump in most cases, at least the Republican side of this, who's the audience of WYAB largely. And yet I see such incredible inconsistencies here and things, and I have disappointments in the Trump administration. I'm not a Trump hater. I want him to be better. But it is incredibly hard to walk this tightrope when he is begging now. Do you know, if you were a saver, what has happened under the Obama administration and now what Trump wants us to return to, which is this incredibly, incredibly almost zero interest rates, do you understand that if you're a saver, all that money that you have sacrificed on any of your savings, be it savings accounts or CDs or any fixed income investment, the money that you have lost over the last 10 years because interest rates have gone down from, you know, maybe a typical 5 or 6% you were getting on savings and CDs and bonds and things like this, that's gone down to, you know, 0.5% on savings accounts, up to maybe 2% on a money market account just in recent times. All of that money you have sacrificed in income to your household, particularly for you people who are retired and on fixed income, that has essentially been a subsidy that you have personally given, a subsidy to our federal government to float more debt. Because make no mistake, the reason that Donald Trump and corporations and the Federal Reserve wants these low interest rates is because they want to spur more borrowing. They want to make it not as consequential for a corporation to borrow a ton of money. And so the money that they have saved on interest has essentially come from the American people who have sacrificed on savings. It's come from pension plans who are massively underwater now. All these pensioners out there that are thinking they're going to retire in the next 10, 15, 20 years, man, I got to tell you, I don't know your pension is going to be able to pay you the benefits they promised to pay you, partly because of the last 10 years of low interest rates. And I'm watching as the American people sacrifice themselves are robbed of interest income that a normal functioning market would be providing them. And the government is essentially being subsidized. The debt at the governmental level, you are facilitating the government's huge debts at the same time you are sacrificing actual income. I can't imagine why retirees have not actually been in the streets on this stuff. I have thought often about how sad it is. Somebody that has done all the right things their whole life. They've paid their bills. They've socked away a little money. They've sacrificed their whole life to leave themselves a nest egg. And then when they get to retirement, it's not time to be real aggressive with your investments, right? You typically want to get more conservative and put it into things that are that just give you a consistent stream of income. And so all of these retirees, and there's a lot of them, as the baby boomers continue to retire for the last 10 years, there's a lot of people need conservative investments to provide them an income. And they've seen their interest income on conservative investments go down by like 75%. And now we want more of that? We want to penalize savers in this country more than that so we can keep this thing going? This is where we are. I don't think people really ever connect the two things, but they should. We're acting against our own best interest to support politicians, parties, and policies that are not serving us. And again, a bit of a broken clock on this one, but you will see there are going to be consequences, and they may be starting right now. This could get very, very ugly. I wish Donald Trump, I wish Trump would return to January 20th, 2017, Donald Trump, when it comes to the economy, because he was nailing it during the campaign trail. I'll be right back.
Think back to your childhood. I bet you can recall that one person who was always tattling on you. You took an extra cookie from the jar. They told mom. Didn't brush your teeth before bed. They ratted you out. Well, our own bodies are a lot like those childhood tattletales, consistently giving us reports of our health and well-being. Naturally You, a nutrition response testing center, uses a natural, scientific, and non-invasive system of analyzing your body to discover the underlying causes of ill health. Certified practitioners at Naturally You use your body's neurological reflexes and acupuncture points to determine what nutrients your body needs, then designs a dietary supplement program based on your body and condition. If you have struggled with weight, fatigue, or ongoing health issues, Naturally You invites you to join them this Tuesday night for a free workshop. Visit naturallyyou.fit to reserve your spot. That's naturallyyou.fit.
We are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Look, this is so hard to cover in Trump country. It really is. I'm just trying to be honest with people. What's going on between us and China is not good. It could turn out good. I don't know if it will or not. And I'm willing to at least say, I don't know if this is going to end up being a good move or not, instead of just saying, oh, this is going to be great. We are playing chicken with China right now. Because China is weak. There's no doubt about it. We are playing chicken with China right now, and neither one of us are wearing our seatbelt. China has just got huge problems, huge economic problems. And the only thing I can say about China that scares me a little bit about them is that they think in such long periods of time. You know, Trump is talking now that maybe the trade war won't be settled until after the elections. That doesn't surprise me at all, because China can wait. Now, they've got a huge economic problem on their hands, too. And I mean, this is two people who are propping up two failed systems facing off with each other in this trade war. I don't know who wins. The Chinese could have huge problems any minute, but so could we. This is not two strong economies built on rock-solid foundations that are butting heads. This is two out-of-control cars careening at each other and nobody's wearing a seatbelt. So it's going to be interesting to see how this thing plays out. I got a caller in line. Hey, caller, are you with me?
I am, Mike. How are you?
Oh, good, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm good. So the farmers, it's not very hard for the farmers to be patient right now, because much like the Delta, you know, there's, what, 250,000 acres in the Delta that's not, it's underwater, not able to be farmed. Most of the Midwest received inordinate amounts of rain, steady, regular rain, throughout the planting season. Very few of them farmers ever even got crops in the ground. That's the first thing. The second thing is most of the crops that are shipped to China go from the Midwest down the Mississippi River to New Orleans and are put on ships headed for China. Shipping has been stopped on the Mississippi River for at least 120 days.
From the flooding, you mean?
From the flooding, from the rains, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not hard to be patient when you don't have anything to sell anyway.
Yeah. You know, I've been a little confused by the farmers, too. Now, you'll see rising bankruptcies, and you'll see some farmers complaining. At the same time, I think that the total number of amount of sales that have been lost due to the trade war, and especially now with China saying they're going to buy nothing, is the sales came down from $19 billion in 2017. Last year, it was half of that, to $9 billion. And then this year, it's going to be substantially less if the Chinese stop. But the bailouts, I mean, the federal money that's gone to farmers seems to actually, I did the math, I can't recall the numbers, the federal money going to farmers seems to be actually a little bit higher than what they're saying the sales they lost are. So why doesn't
exactly.
that make everybody...
And since the average farm is $1.3 million in debt...
Yeah, that's so sad.
...probably a blessing in their opinions, you know.
Well, you would think that if they could say, okay, well, we don't have to plant, we don't have to take the risk, we can just sit back and get the check, and if the check is, you know, is coming from the tariff stuff... Now, again, that... Tariffs are coming from American citizens. They are. China's getting hurt by this, too, but anyway, it's hard for me to quite understand to... Because I try to read the headlines and figure it out how, because some farmers are suffering. I mean, there are big problems on farms right now. And part of it, like you say, is weather related. And the China stuff is not helping them. If they're being made whole by the bailouts, you would think that there wouldn't seem to be a problem. So I'm confused by that.
Yeah. And again, if you have nothing to sell, why worry about whether or not you can sell it?
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's definitely been a 1-2 punch to them for sure, and you're right about the weather. I've been really surprised we haven't seen our food prices spiking based just solely on the weather, but maybe the fact that they need to sell more domestically now is actually keeping prices down, so I don't know. How do you think this thing...
That's exactly what's going on. The little bit of crops that are getting out are staying here because China's not buying them, so we're not seeing food shortages here because of that as a consequence, and, you know... It's probably, you know, it's working out as a good thing, even though it might be an unintended consequence.
How do you see the trade war playing out?
Well, you know, we've got to be on an even playing field with the rest of the world. You know, for too long, our politicians have been taking payoffs, giving it to the Americans in the shorts, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
So that had to stop, and it's going to be a little painful to do that. I understand that, and I think the farmers understand that, too, and that's why they're, you know, they're not at the White House with pitchforks.
Do you think they'll hang in there? Because the election is a lifetime away. I mean, in politics these days, another 12 to 14 months before.
Everything that I'm hearing is not only is the crops let's just say, failing this year, but they're not going to be able to plant them next year as well.
Why?
That's what all the farmers in the Delta are saying because of the flooding.
Oh, really?
It's going to take them a year to get everything back in order before they can even plant again.
Good grief.
And, you know, the Mississippi Delta is not the only place where this problem exists.
Yeah, the Midwest got really hammered. I mean, yeah, we've seen it here ourselves, but, yeah, the Midwest really took some flooding hits.
I mean, I was in Illinois in right around July the 4th, and probably 80% of the fields were not even planted or had just been planted. They don't have a long enough growing period there to actually get a crop out because of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, and like I said, I've heard, you know, the powers that be in this state talking about, and the farmers saying, not only are we not going to have a crop this year, but we're not going to have one next year either.
Yeah, well.
So I think it will extend to the election, even though that does seem like a long time away.
Yeah, that's a. I see two very weak economies facing off right now, and you know, both of them thinking the other one's going to fail first. And I think both China and the United States are precarious in where they are economically, all the headlines and rosy talk from each notwithstanding. So it's fascinating to watch. And, you know, ultimately, as somebody like me, I agree with you. Free fair trade is what we should be doing. And if China reduces its stuff, I mean, ultimately, I think Trump's real goal is to just have zero tariffs on both sides. And we're just doing our thing. That, you know, that makes some sense.
Right.
And that's something it certainly does appeal to me. So if it goes that way, it's just this is not an easy thing to go through. And these things historically have not turned out real well. So we'll see.
Yep. All right. You have a good one.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah. You know, I mean, I don't think there's too many people that don't think that, you know, trade deals have been askew. But as I say, again, you know, American people have been benefiting from it. I don't know if you saw the headlines. Walmart just beat expectations. I mean, Walmart is just essentially a Chinese outlet store. Walmart's doing fine. They're still selling a lot of Chinese goods out of Walmart. And American people have benefited from cheaper products. Now, I don't like the fact they use slaves, and I don't like the Chinese system. And there's a whole bunch of kind of human reasons why buying things from China I have a problem with. But the bottom line is we can't act like we've not benefited from it. Some of our corporations haven't. Manufacturing jobs have disappeared as they've gone to China. That's definitely true about that. But how many jobs have been created by the fact that American families shopping at Walmart and buying these cheap Chinese goods has a little bit left over for vacations or to go out and eat? So there are restaurants that are benefiting from cheap Chinese products. There are car manufacturers. People have a little bit more money for their monthly car payment. I mean, there are benefits to getting cheap products from China. But This is just interesting. It is a game of chicken, and I don't think the outcome is guaranteed either way. All right, we'll be right back in just a second. In the next hour, we're going to have Aaron Rice from Mississippi Justice Institute in. They filed a lawsuit he wanted to stop by and talk about. It's a very interesting topic, but I love his organization, Mississippi Justice Institute. They are actually in the trenches fighting to try to get some free market principles to Mississippi. And boy, if one thing Mississippi needs, it's more economic activity, more economic freedom, and more jobs. So that's what they're fighting for. We'll be with him next hour. Stay with me. All night with the king. Food allergies know how difficult it can be to find quality, affordable restaurants that cater to your needs. That's why the folks over at Your Pie have made a commitment to ensure everyone can enjoy great-tasting pizza. Your Pie offers gluten-free dough, vegan, non-dairy cheese, and non-dairy sorbet. Just ask for it next time you're in line. Matter of fact, just mention any allergy you have, and the folks at Your Pie will go over the top to make sure you can safely enjoy their delicious food. That's Your Pie in Gluckstadt, where food allergies never stop you from being able to express your inner pizza.
Right into this world, all alone. God takes your soul. You're on your own.
I got an email yesterday. You know, I'm hoping next hour I can get Aaron from Mississippi Justice Institute. We'll talk a little bit. You know, they do a lot on tackling state regulations. I'd kind of like to be talking to him about red flag laws. Got an interesting email yesterday. A lot of numbers, so probably not great for radio, but some of them are pretty stark. It talks about the fact that breaks down the statistics of gun deaths. 30,000 gun deaths per year, with a population of, at this time that this was done, 324 million people. The math is that death by firearm is 0.00925%. So it's very small, and that's the problem we have. We're so emotional, we react to these horrific incidents like these most recent mass shootings, and it makes the problem feel so much bigger than it really is. As I start breaking down these 30,000 deaths by guns each year, they're say 65% of those are by suicide, which would not be prevented by gun laws. Obviously, if Jeffrey Epstein has taught us nothing else, it's that the bedsheet is an equally deadly weapon if you are committed to killing yourself. 15% are by law enforcement in the line of duty. 17% are through criminal activity, gang and drug-related or mentally ill persons. That's gun violence. And then 3% are accidental. So it says really that the gun violence, you know, one person perpetrated on another in a criminal activity is only 5,100 per year. They broke these down by cities. Again, not a lot of surprises there. They found that 89% of all gun violence was in Jackson, Mississippi. I'm just kidding. That's a tip of the fedora to Kim Wade. No, it's Jackson. We got our problems, but we're not in the major leagues yet. Chicago, of these, you know, violent acts between people, Chicago, 9.4% of those. Baltimore, 6.7%. Detroit, 6.5%. And Washington, D.C., even 2.3%. A 54% increase over prior years. All those people getting shot in Washington, D.C., maybe not the ones we want, but basically 25% of all gun crime happens in these four cities. And this is what, you know, when you really start to parse it, if you start to look at the information and you look at the statistics and you look at the reality of the situation and take the emotions out, our guttural gut reaction to these mass killings, you realize that guns are not the problem. These red flag laws seek to take away constitutional freedoms to address a problem that is really very small. And one of the most stark things when you look at the, you know, what politicians jump to their podiums to talk about needing to do something now, the cigarette statistic is always shocking to me. Now, people want to smoke cigarettes, and that's certainly their right. I'm not talking about outlawing cigarettes, but it is just stunning. You can look at what we're talking about here is that violent person-to-person criminal activity gun deaths at 5,100 a year, and you've got cigarettes that are attributed to kill 500,000 people per year, 500,000 people per year. 200,000 people are killed per year from medical mistakes. So when you put these things in some level of perspective, you realize that this huge emergency that these politicians feel the need to act on immediately, even if it strips us of some of our rights, is really doesn't make much sense, not much common sense. 710,000 people die per year from heart disease. You know, if we really are, if laws are designed to save the most number of people, which you would think would be common sense, if they're going to spend some time on something, you think you'd want to get bang for your buck. Well, they are shooting in the wrong direction, pun intended. Well, that's it for this hour. We're going to come back. We got Aaron Rice from the Mississippi Justice Institute coming in. They're filing some lawsuits trying to make Mississippi a more free market, business-friendly place, and that's always a good thing. So stay with us for Aaron Rice. We'll be right back with him. Stay with us. Bye-bye.
Mike Madison here. All of us should be flying our U.S. flag. And now's the perfect time to contact a complete flag source to have a flagpole installed at your home or business. For a limited time, all U.S. flags up to 5x8 along with flagpole setups are 15% off. That's 15, 20, and 25-foot in-ground kits, sectional, and aluminum. House spinner poles will keep your flag from wrapping in the wind, and a complete flag source has all of the right brackets. Visit a complete flag source, I-55 North Frontage Road, Jackson, or online at CompleteFlags.com.
I need your arms around me. I need to feel your touch. I need your understanding. I need your love so much.
You tell me that. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. Thanks so much for joining me today. In this hour, we've got Aaron Rice with us in studio here. He is with the Mississippi Justice Institute, and I kind of tell them to let me know anytime they want to come on when they're doing something interesting in the state of Mississippi, because they are about economic justice and removing barriers for people that want to be entrepreneurs or the businesses that want to thrive in Mississippi. And the one thing Mississippi needs is increased economic activity and increased opportunity to get us off the bottom of some of these lists. So, Aaron, I appreciate you coming in today.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Mike. And you're right about that. We really do need to increase that. You know, we're talking about this one case right now, but in general, when you're talking about occupational licensing, which this case is going to deal with, we license in Mississippi 66 jobs that are low-income and middle-income jobs, and a lot of those licenses that we require are for jobs that really don't affect public health and safety at all. And so it's been shown that that's a big barrier. You know, it's one in five Mississippians that need a license to do their job. And so we're keeping a lot of people out of work with some really unnecessary regulations.
Is there any statistics on that? Have y'all done any research to know what kind of economic activity that stifles?
Yeah, we have, and actually other groups have too, primarily. And so some of the numbers out there are, I want to say that we lose 13,000 jobs a year, but just based on our occupational licensing laws. And so it's a big job killer. And like I said, it's one in five Mississippians. So, you know, to put that in perspective, if you go back to the 1950s, and this is a national statistic, but it was 1 in 20 Americans needed a license to do their job. And then if you fast forward to today in Mississippi, it's 1 out of every 5. So,
why does that happen? Is it just are they control freaks? I mean, is it vested interests that are trying to keep competition down in certain things?
I think it's primarily rent seeking. And so when you say rent seeking, what you mean is any time that groups are trying to, you know, bend or use the government to benefit them at the detriment of everybody else. And so a lot of times, you know, I think that people see an advantage to saying, well, let's license our occupation. You know, here, let's take an example. You've got an occupation that is not licensed and doesn't really have a public health and safety impact, may not require a lot of skill to do the job or education to do the job. And so they will, you know, often counterintuitively lobby for regulation to be regulated.
Right, and people don't understand that regulations are tools by entrenched, you know, by the businesses that actually invite some self-regulation.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, and they do that for a couple of reasons, but one, you know, a lot of times I think they view it as just a way to kind of bring some prestige to their profession because, ooh, now I'm a licensed,
certified, such and such.
And we're recognized by the government, you know, that's kind of like put this little stamp of significance on us, as opposed to just being somebody out in the world that says, I do this job, you know. And so they do that, and I think that brings some prestige to them. But then once they do that, it really spirals out of control, too, because now you have this board who's in charge of regulating the profession, who is generally made up of people who practice that profession. And so you introduce this dynamic where, you know, the board regulating the profession has a vested interest to keep other competitors out to the benefit of the people that are already in that job and say, you like in the case that we'll talk about today, and say, oh, look, a new kind of technique has come along and some people who want to get into our business that, you know, aren't us, well, let's try to keep them out and let's keep a barrier in place to make it really hard for them to do that job and compete with us.
All right. Well, let's get into that because I know this is a case that will raise some eyebrows. What is the what is the current lawsuit that you've just filed?
Yeah. So we are representing an entrepreneur in Mississippi. Her name is Deepa Bhattarai. She's from Nepal. She came to America legally, and in Nepal, you know, people will a grooming technique over there is called eyebrow threading. And so over here, you know, my wife does this. A lot of people do this. They wax their eyebrows or even just at home, they'll tweeze their eyebrows, you know. Well, that doesn't happen in Nepal and South Asian countries and even Middle Eastern countries. They have always used this technique called eyebrow threading. And what they do is they take a single strand of cotton thread and they kind of, you know, put it in their hands in a certain way. And they, it's really hard to describe. We've got a video if you want to watch it on our website.
Yeah, it's fascinating to watch. Yeah, it's very, it's I don't know how they do that, but
I know,
yeah, it's pretty cool.
It is neat. And so, but they've got the threads are kind of crisscrossed in this way. And when they move them across your eyebrow, it basically kind of entwines the hair into this little wrap that is spiraling across your eyebrow and it pulls the hair out. And so, it's a very simple technique. You can learn to do it in 15 minutes. Now, you're not going to be good at it like my client, but she's been doing it for most of her life. And so it's very simple. It's very safe, been practiced for centuries, like I said, in South Asian countries. And so that's all they do. And so she came here, was in college. A lot of her friends loved what she was doing. She did that for them as a favor. And she saw an opening in the market and realized there aren't any eyebrow threading businesses in North Mississippi. Here's a business opportunity. So she went out with nothing but $240, started a business. You know, within the first year or two, she had opened a second location, had 4 employees, was just doing great, living the American dream. And then the government showed up and shut her down and said, oh, you have to have an esthetician's license to do that. And so when you look at the law...
Had she had any complaints?
No.
How did she get on the government's radar? So nobody was catastrophically injured
I've never heard of an instance of somebody being catastrophically injured by eyebrow threading. And so, but no complaints. Her customers loved her. I mean, absolutely loved her. Obviously, she actually started it as just a kiosk. I mean, it was just a chair in the middle of the mall when, you know, kind of in the middle of the hallway. And quickly had to move into a storefront in that mall because she had so many customers. And then, like I said, opened a second location. So the business just really took off. And it's a great business. It really is. I mean, all it takes is some thread. It costs $1 to get a spool of thread.
A thread, a chair.
A chair, and you're good to go. And so so anyway, she was doing that. And like I said, you have to have an esthetician's license in Mississippi to do that. And so here's the rub with the case. She would have to, and she has actually, she tried to do this. She started taking the classes and just doesn't have the time to do it. She's actually a graduate student at Ole Miss now. But you have to take 600 hours of training, spend up to $12,000 to get that training. Not 1 hour of the classes you'll take in beauty school teach eyebrow threading. And that's all she offers. That's the only, she doesn't want to wax eyebrows. She doesn't want to tweeze. She doesn't want to do facial massage. She doesn't want to cut hair. She doesn't want to do any of that. All she is offering is eyebrow threading. They will not teach her eyebrow threading. Not that she needs to be taught. She already knows how to do it. But they won't even teach it to her, but yet they're going to make her take 600 hours of training and spend $12,000 to be able to do this job.
What is their rationale? This is always based on what they are saying is a health and safety issue.
Yeah.
Is what they. Is
yeah, yeah. And yeah. So the government has not answered our lawsuit yet. I can speculate and tell you that I think they'll say, you know, oh, well, it's a hair removal practice. And so anytime you remove hair, you run the risk of maybe passing on a staph infection, or maybe the person will bleed, or, you know, something like that. And so, you know, the problem there is that in order to mitigate those kind of risks, you're really talking about, you know, some of the risks are just risks that occur with any human interaction. I mean,
right.
the risk of, you know, passing on a viral infection to somebody, well, that could happen between you and I right now.
Yeah.
And so, but even aside from that, the risks that are specific to hair removal, you know, the solutions to those or the things you need to do to mitigate those risks are common sense things. I mean, it's like wash your hands between customers, you know, use a new piece of thread with every customer, throw the thread away when you're done, keep a clean workspace, you know, that's common sense. Now, and if a customer, you know, has a skin irritation, you know, use some rubbing alcohol or witch hazel or something like that. It doesn't take 600 hours to learn that.
Right.
And so, you know, our client wouldn't object if the government said, okay, if you want an eyebrow thread, you have to take a 1 hour class on sanitation and disinfection, and then, you know, you'll be certified and you can go out and do this. But that's not what they're doing. They're saying you have to take 600 hours that is on, you know, a very minuscule portion of it will be on sanitation and disinfection. The rest of it, we're going to teach you how to do things. Not only do you not want to offer, you're actually opposed to. I mean, your practice is kind of an alternative to these.
Right,
so
yeah.
We're going to make you learn how to wax. We're going to make you learn, you know, facial massage. We're going to make you learn marketing and resume writing and salon management and, you know, things that really all you want is a chair and a thread.
Right. Yeah. And that, which has already been successful.
Exactly. We don't need to teach you how to manage your salon. You clearly know that. You've done really well.
And, you know, the thing is, too, who has the most vested interest in her keeping her clients safe and happy and, you know, her.
Yeah.
I mean,
no,
she doesn't.
Well, and anyway. Here's the problem with it, too, is that, you know, I mean, look, we live in a real world here where there's risks with everything. When I got out of the bed this morning, there was a risk that I could fall down and hurt myself. I mean, and so, you know, what the government often does is takes everyday risks or risks that are minuscule and can be easily dealt with that we all face in life in every day, every encounter we have,
absolutely.
Everything we do. And use that to bootstrap in 600 hours of training? Are you kidding me? But the government, with a straight face, I guarantee you, will be in court alongside me arguing with a very straight face that, you know, that is a perfectly legitimate thing to do. And so, you know, you got to have a group like us that is willing to fight back against that and use some common sense and try to bring some common sense into the courtroom and into our laws.
How did you find her? Did you just, like, okay, so where is she right now? Is she completely shut down?
Yeah, she's completely shut down.
Think of all those big bushy eyebrows up in North Mississippi right now.
Even worse, think about all that money that she has not earned over time. I mean, she was doing great. And so, I mean, this has been a real harm to her, you know. And that's another thing that people should understand is that despite the fact that our client, Deepa Batara, has lost a lot of income since she was shut down in 2017, we're not suing for money. We're not saying, oh, we have lost income and lost wages. You have to pay us back for that, you know, or any of that. And we're not suing for damages on behalf of DEPA. DEPA is not getting any money out of this lawsuit. And so we're just saying we want a court to strike down this law and say it's unconstitutional. And so, but yeah, she's been shut down. She is a graduate student at Ole Miss right now. She was at actually the Mississippi University for Women when this happened as an undergrad, and had started this business while she was there. She's a real hard worker. I mean, she was a full-time student, actually taking 24 hours, which is a lot more than a normal load. She was taking 24 hours. She was on a full scholarship. She was an RA in her dorm and at the same time had started a business and was personally working up to 20 hours a week in the business, hiring employees as well to keep it running. And so she was doing all that, got shut down. She has been fighting on this issue. She came personally down to Jackson, presented to the board. That was a whole headache in and of itself, just trying to get them to let her talk to the board. And she came down, presented to them about the safety of eyebrow threading, how it's really not a public safety risk at all, health risk at all, how the current curriculum, the required cosmetology curriculum was completely irrelevant to her practice, the economic harm that the regulations were causing. Board wasn't interested in that. In truth, to their credit, they really can't do anything about it. This was put into the Mississippi Code. This is a statutory thing. It's not even just a regulatory thing. Now, I'm sure that that there were a lot of vested interests that made sure that got put into the code by the legislature. But so,
600 hours of anything in 12 grand weeds out a lot of competition.
It does. It weeds out a lot. I mean, if you look around, so eyebrow threading is actually, may sound like a random thing to a lot of people right now that are listening in, but this is gaining in popularity nationwide. It's really kind of a huge fad and a big trend. And if you go to New York right now, that's what everybody is doing. And not only New York, any big city, but really even in our surrounding states. And so it's a huge thing. It's legal to do in Tennessee, in Louisiana, in Alabama, in Texas, in Arizona. It's actually been struck down as unconstitutional in Texas, a law like this was. And so
does that help you to set some precedent?
Yeah, it definitely helps me. Yeah. Now, it's a little different situation. They ruled it under the Texas Constitution. I'm arguing under the U.S. Constitution and the Mississippi Constitution. So it'll be a little bit different, but it helps for sure. And point being, this is a really big trend. And if you look around in Mississippi, you barely see it anywhere. I mean, you've got a few licensed, salons that will offer threading on the side. But if you go to other states, you have standalone people who do nothing but eyebrow threading all over the place. And it's a good thing. I mean, my wife did it as a demonstration for this. We did a video. If you go to our website, mspolicy.org, you'll be able to see my wife getting her eyebrows threaded. And it's faster. It's more precise. It's less painful. People just love it. And my wife said, when I get my eyebrows waxed, my eyebrows, my skin is puffy and red for the rest of the day. I don't want to see anybody for the rest of the day. With this, there was no redness, no irritation, no swelling, none of that. It didn't hurt nearly as bad as waxing. She said it actually didn't hurt at all. I'm sure that's different depending on your pain threshold.
I was actually hoping you were going to bring that woman in today. I'm 52 years old. I don't know what is going on, but my eyebrows. You have to be constantly vigilant.
Oh, yeah.
Eyebrows at this age. It's disappearing on the top and coming out on the top of my eyes.
Yeah, and everywhere else. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, but it's, you can see the effect of our law. I mean, just like you said, this is holding entrepreneurs back. I mean, if you go into our surrounding states, you'll see eyebrow threaders everywhere. As soon as you cross the state line and you get into Mississippi, they're almost nowhere. And there's a reason for that. We are holding back an industry. And my client has literally considered going into Tennessee. I mean, she's already in Oxford, obviously, so not far from Tennessee. Her business partner is actually does live in Tennessee. And they've considered just maybe, opening up in Tennessee instead, maybe even Alabama, maybe even Louisiana. So, while, our elected leaders are always talking about creating jobs and we're having, ribbon cutting ceremonies and we're spending money to, bring jobs here.
Right.
We're actively killing jobs at the same time. We're telling my client, shut your business down and why don't you move it into another state where this is legal?
Yeah. Where you dangerous eyebrow threaders can. Yeah. Do they ever do any issues like that ever get raised and they go, Yeah, I guess that kind of slipped through the cracks. That is asinine. We're just going to change the policy.
I haven't seen it.
Well, it keeps the attorneys in business.
Yeah,
We're talking to Aaron Rice with Mississippi Justice Institute. And this issue, you know, it is eyebrow-threading. I understand that. This makes a much, much larger point, and it's these small cases that should highlight the problems that go far beyond just eyebrows that people need to pay attention to and realize the economic opportunities we're blowing with this kind of regulatory structure in place. Anyway, we'll be right back with Aaron when we come back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB.
Think back to your childhood. I bet you can recall that one person who was always tattling on you. You took an extra cookie from the jar. They told mom. Didn't brush your teeth before bed. They ratted you out. Well, our own bodies are a lot like those childhood tattletales, consistently giving us reports of our health and well-being. Naturally You, a nutrition response testing center, uses a natural, scientific, and non-invasive system of analyzing your body to discover the underlying causes of ill health. Certified practitioners at Naturally You use your body's neurological reflexes and acupuncture points to determine what nutrients your body needs, then designs a dietary supplement program based on your body and condition. If you have struggled with weight, fatigue, or ongoing health issues, Naturally You invites you to join them this Tuesday night for a free workshop. Visit naturallyyou.fit to reserve your spot. That's naturallyyou.fit.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and we've got in studio with us Aaron Rice from the Mississippi Justice Institute. We're talking about this case on the eyebrow threader who was essentially run out of business by a ridiculous regulation in the state of Mississippi that Mississippi Justice Institute is challenging. I was just going to ask you to kind of wrap that one up. Did this girl, so you say when the government finds out she's one of these underground eyebrow threaders and they leap into action immediately.
Got to do something about
that. Yeah, got to stop that immediately. Again, and to anybody who's listening, with no complaints, no customer complaints, nothing but praise for them. This is just the bureaucracy acting. You said she came down here and appealed to the board.
Yes.
I guess this is the people in charge of the anesthetists?
Yeah, it's estheticians.
Estheticians. Okay.
And, yep.
Did she have to hire an attorney to do all that? Has she been out of pocket a lot of money?
No, she's been personally dealing with this. And then I got involved, and I've been involved with her for a little while, before we filed this lawsuit. And so I'll tell you, this is interesting. When I first got involved with her, I tried to help see if we could, resolve this without litigation. And so the first thing that I did was, backing up, before she even got in touch with me, she had not only come down and spoken to the board and tried to convince them to kind of exempt eyebrow threaders and to allow her to engage in the limited practice of only eyebrow threading without an esthetician's license. And that didn't work. And then she also applied for reciprocity. And so she actually had a kind of private certification in Nepal in being a beautician, because she'd actually worked in a salon before she ever came over here. Again, it's not required. You don't have to have a license to thread in Nepal, but she was offering other services over there and just on her own because customers may see value in it. She had gotten kind of a private certification in kind of a beautician's field over there. And so she tried to use that to get reciprocity in Mississippi. Mississippi State Board of Cosmetology said no to that. So then I got involved with her. I actually drafted a bill and put it into the legislature. Senator Angela Hill was willing to sponsor that bill that would have exempted eyebrow threaders from these ridiculous, onerous regulations. And that got completely shot down in the legislature. Didn't go anywhere. Didn't even get a vote. And if you look at the minutes of the Mississippi State Board of Cosmetology, they mention my bill in their minutes. And they say, there's this bill that is about eyebrow threading. We need to appoint a political liaison to
talk to
the legislature about this. And so they appointed the board president to act as the political liaison to talk to the legislature about my bill that would have exempted eyebrow threaders. And then all I know, and there were some behind the scenes discussions, but what we know as a fact is that the board got involved, and then that my bill died immediately, did not even get a vote. not even in committee. And so,
nobody knew how powerful the eyebrow plucking cabal, eyebrow industry is, that they wield such tremendous power.
Tremendous power. Don't mess with that. And so, we tried to do this the easy way. And look, I mean, none of this was, I mean, we were being very upfront. Senator Angela Hill was telling, the committee chair of the public health committee, saying, look, there is a lawsuit that's probably going to be filed about this if we can't get this fixed. So, I mean, everybody knew that.
Yeah.
I think the cosmetology board knew there was going to be a lawsuit filed too, and they were still willing to kill this in the legislature or to appoint their political liaison and then it gets killed. So anyway, we tried to do that, didn't work. And so last resort here, Deepa actually has 344 hours of credit for beauty school already. She was trying to do what she could to get this license. And again, I told you, I mean, they're not even teaching her what she needs to learn. And she's trying to do grad school. And she had an internship with multinational corporations and all of this going on and doesn't have time to.
She sounds like the kind of person we want to discourage from participating, from staying in Mississippi.
Exactly. Yeah. We need to run her out. And so. So anyway, last effort here, we submitted an application for Deepa to sit for the esthetician licensing exam.
With her accumulated
344 hours and say, give her the test, and see if you can license her, And the board wrote her back and me back and said, absolutely not. You haven't taken the 600 hours. So that was the last stop for us, and now we filed this lawsuit.
Isn't it amazing to think about this person who really does exemplify what we want out of the immigrant? The big national debate about getting the most productive and the most people that will contribute to America. Yeah. You got this all star coming, and she comes from Nepal for the great American dream, only to realize that she doesn't have the same freedom in Mississippi that she's got in Nepal.
I totally agree with you, and I think that's such a sad statement.
Yeah.
I mean, we are the land of opportunity. We are supposed to be, just about freedom and opportunity. And to think that people come from other countries and a place like Nepal, that's in just an Eastern society that is not necessarily, like our Western tradition of democracy and freedom and all of that, comes from the Far East to the land of opportunity and realizes that she's got more restrictions and regulations on her here than she did at home. I mean, that truly makes me sad to think about.
Well, we see not just Mississippi, but obviously Mississippi's got its issues, but the United States is slipping further and further down the economic freedom rankings.
Yeah.
I can't remember where we are now, 17, one point I saw. I mean, it really is sad, and this is just it's metastasized.
I think that a lot of people, honestly, a lot of Americans have started to confuse freedom with just majority rule and popular will. And so people think we're free, why? Because we have, not even a democracy, but a constitutional republic, and we elect people. And so I think people think, we're free. We're very free. We don't have a king and we make our own rules, but that doesn't mean you're free. I mean, the majority, mob can still make you very unfree and pass a lot of rules and a lot of laws that limit your ability to do what you want to do and to go out and live the American dream. And so, just because enough rent-seeking factions out there can get their hands on the government levers and pass regulations and get the legislature to pass laws that benefit them doesn't mean that that's freedom.
Yeah.
That's definitely not freedom.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we got a lot of busybodies, a lot too much bureaucracy in this country, to be sure. I wanted to talk, we got to take a quick break, and then I wanted to talk about the veggie burger. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
That's a battle that you fought, and, listeners may, I don't know, I just think of Mississippi. We love our meat,
I definitely love meat.
But it's another story, just about some level of freedom. And, the thing that I find with people, and I even see this on the conservative side of things. Now, I'm a libertarian guy, so I kind of understand these things. But a lot of conservatives, we're all for freedom except when it goes against something that we want.
Oh, totally.
We want this to be – we love talking about the Constitution and freedom and all that stuff, but if it's something we disagree with, we do not mind bringing the heavy hand of government down.
Or if it affects our vested interest. All of a sudden, this is different. I'm all for freedom, but this is different.
Yeah,
you're talking about my pocketbook right now.
Exactly. All All right, we'll talk about Veggie Burger when we come back. We're talking to Aaron Rice, Mississippi Justice Institute. Stay with us.
Mike Madison here. All of us should be flying our U.S. flag. And now's the perfect time to contact a complete flag source to have a flagpole installed at your home or business. For a limited time, all U.S. flags up to 5x8 along with flagpole setups are 15% off. That's 15, 20, and 25-foot in-ground kits, sectional, and aluminum. House spinner poles will keep your flag from wrapping in the wind, and a complete flag source has all of the right brackets. Visit a complete flag source, I-55 North Frontage Road, Jackson, or online at CompleteFlags.com.
All right, we're back. This is the Mike Madison Show here with Aaron Rice from Mississippi Justice Institute. Tell us just real quick, I mean, what's the purpose of your organization?
Yeah, you know? Yeah. We're a public interest a nonprofit law firm. And if you hadn't heard of one of those, you know, what we do is we fight for Mississippians' constitutional rights, and we don't charge, you know, for doing that. And so we rely on donors to support our efforts. So if you're interested in the kind of work we're doing, go to msjustice.org, or you can also go to mspolicy.org. We are the legal arm of the Mississippi Center for Public Policy. Please support us. We really do need the support. We can't do the work we do for DEPA and all these other cases without people like your listeners who are willing to just go on, even if it's just donating $40, $50, $100. Every little bit helps.
And you also, what if somebody has got a case where they think they're being denied some freedoms?
Definitely. Go to msjustice.org. We have a case intake page on there. And you can, you know, give us your name, your contact information. It asks you some questions about what, you know, what your issue is. Submit that. Trust me, we get it. It goes through. I personally look at all of those. And do that. That's how we, you know, that's how DEPA got in touch with us, our client on the eyebrow threading case. So definitely do that. If you've got it, and, you know, if you're wondering, how do I know if I should reach out? I mean, you said if my constitutional rights are violated, well, how do I know if that's the case? You know, I mean, an easier way to describe it might just be if you are trying to do something, particularly if it involves, you know, you're trying to earn a living, you're trying to do something with your property, you're trying to do something with, you know, your Second Amendment rights or your free speech rights, but you're trying to do something and there the government has either told you you cannot do it or you know that there is a law or a regulation that's in place that doesn't allow you to do that, and it seems just unfair or bizarre to you, it doesn't make sense to you, then reach out to us and I can look into it and kind of give an analysis on whether it's constitutional and whether we would have a legal claim to strike it down or not. But if the government is stopping you from doing something and it seems unfair and bizarre, just reach out.
So are you primarily in context of commercial, or do you also do civil liberties type stuff too?
Yeah, no, we do. So we do economic rights, education choice, property rights, free speech, Second Amendment. We'll even do that. So that's kind of our areas of focus. Right now, we're really kind of putting this year, we're kind of putting a focus on the economic rights. So we're talking about the right to earn an honest living, or, you know, getting rid of monopolies. You'd be surprised how many times that people and companies will try to use the government to set up a little monopoly for themselves. And now you want to get into that market, you want to work in that space, but you can't. And because there's a law that says only this one company, or it may not say that, but it's essentially written in such a way that only one company qualifies to do that work. And so anyway, we're very interested in those kind of things. If you're trying to earn an honest living or you're trying to do something with your business and you can't, then reach out. Now, I should say, I mean, because I do get emails about this, you know, so there's no confusion. I mean, we don't do, you know, criminal work. We don't defend, you know, people from criminal charges. We don't do divorce and custody and family disputes. You know, we don't do government conspiracy theories. We don't investigate, you know, whether there's a conspiracy going on. And honestly, we don't even handle fraud because I don't have, you know, I'm operating, you know, some people think that this is some kind of government appointed job I have. It's not. I'm operating like any other attorney when I go into court. So I don't have the authority to investigate like I'm some kind of law enforcement officer. Now,
right.
If you're worried about fraud, you know, contact our great state auditor, Shad White, you know, the AG's office, the U.S. Attorney's Office, the FBI, whoever you want. But, you know, I can talk to you about that and kind of maybe point you in the right direction. But I do get calls and emails about fraud and government fraud. And, again, I don't have a way to do anything about that. So.
Well, let me ask you something. I probably should have called you a while back. Are you familiar with these environmental courts that are popping up or really around the country but have recently infested, I'll use Donald Trump's term, infested Madison, Mississippi? I was the first person ever prosecuted in the environmental court in Madison, Mississippi because I allowed my pool, my backyard swimming pool, to turn green with algae in January.
I think I heard about that. Yes. I didn't know that was you.
Yes. I was the very first one, and I also had some marks on my eaves, but it became, I was forced by the city under threat of some pretty high fines. At one point, I was out in my backyard using my scooper, my net to bash through ice on the top of my pool to scoop leaves out from underneath the ice because, this was also in a pool that was not visible to anybody unless they crawled up on a fence and looked down. It did become kind of a big issue. But what do you think about these environmental courts that force?
I actually have not heard of environmental courts. Is this when you say that, is this like a city code enforcement?
Yeah. This, I believe, stems from, and this is, I believe, started with the United Nations, what's it called? It's International Standards of Building Codes and Maintenance or something like that. It's something that's international that Madison has taken on. They are harassing the citizens of Madison County. Yeah. I was patient zero in this particular case.
Right.
I've talked to many people that are still in Madison that are dealing with these things.
Well, let me tell you, honestly, we should talk off air about it. and kind of have a confidential conversation about it maybe. But no, I haven't heard. I do know I have seen some stuff about the city of Madison's code enforcement, and I didn't realize that there was necessarily an environmental component of that. I know there was a city kind of beautification code aspect of it, but no, that's interesting. And I think I did hear about it. I don't know where I heard about your.
I can't believe I didn't
think
to call y'all. It's been over a year since I guess I made my first starring appearance in that court. Last time I was in there, they came back at me again for something. And believe me, I'm sounding a little bit like white trash, trailer trash here talking about this stuff, but I had let my pool get green. I had a ton of canopy, a lot of leaves, trees that go over my pool, essentially. And I had big dogs, so I didn't want to put a cover on it in case they fell through and I wasn't paying attention. Anyway, it went green every single winter.
Yeah.
And then every spring, I just shocked it, cleaned it, and used it all summer. I did that for 8 years. It was in the ninth year when they started these things that I began to have the knocks on my door.
Yeah.
And very, very imposing code management guy. Very full uniform and everything. So it was a big deal.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, around the country, and just to be clear, not that I'm saying this is the case in Madison, but there have been problems with some cities that literally use their code enforcement as a major revenue driver to basically just keep the city afloat, and that does get very problematic, even from a constitutional standpoint when you start using petty codes as a pretext to extract funding for the city from your citizens. And there's been cities that have really gone over the line with it to the point where, every resident of the city is getting fined multiple times. And, there's basically nobody that's not getting fined or cited. And again, in these situations, a lot of times these cities are literally like just funding the city through this code enforcement.
Oh, yeah.
And that gets really interesting and kind of dicey when cities cross into those waters. Now, again, I don't think Madison necessarily, I don't know that they have a revenue problem to that extent where they're doing enforcement for that reason, but that has happened across the country in a lot of cities.
Yeah, well, it's one of those things too. I think sometimes conservatives are short-sighted. Madison's beautiful. There's no doubt about it. They've done a great job of the way that it's grown and the per capita income out there. It's safe. My kids grew up there and went to schools. They enjoyed the schools. They've done a great job, but people have to understand that, when you start letting these things happen where you're just micromanaging citizens for petty infractions and making them a legal matter, suddenly has to be addressed in court. Not between neighbors. That's a bad
I've always liked the HOA model too for a lot of these issues because and of course that doesn't do things on a citywide basis. It does them on a neighborhood by neighborhood basis. But I always have liked the aspect that you know, you can move into a neighborhood with covenants on the land. You know that when you decide to move
voluntarily.
There. Voluntarily. You voluntarily join this HOA, and that's part of the deal when you move in, and you know that. And you should know that. If you don't, that's really your fault, because it's very clear and that you're buying land with covenants on it. And so you voluntarily enter into that agreement with your neighbors, and you all say, we're all going to mow our grass. We're going to follow these things. If we want a woodshed in the back, it's got to match or whatever. The neighborhood committee has to look at it. You know, and that can seem very micromanagerial, but it's very local. I mean,
you can change the board of directors.
You can change it.
Yeah.
And you agreed to it, too.
Right.
I mean, you knew that when you moved in and you agreed to it. So I've always thought that that was a very good way to address these things because, again, you know, I mean, people, you know, I mean, obviously, there are, you know, people do have some valid concerns when it comes to property values and things like that. And so I've always just thought you should get it to as local of a group as you can and let them control it as much as possible to, you know, look out for their own interest along with their neighbors and do it in a voluntary way. Again, like you said, as opposed to necessarily dragging people into court over all
right.
of it. So,
yeah, much easier to fight the HOA than it is city government.
Yeah.
So, all right, one more break and we'll be back. We're talking to Aaron Rice, Mississippi Justice Institute. I did want to get to the veggie burger thing. I think that's kind of an interesting case that y'all handled.
Yeah.
So stay with
yeah.
us. We'll get to that when we come back.
If you're considering renovations, remodels, or roofing, call on Tri-County Restoration. Do you have an insurance claim? We work with all insurance companies. Tri-County offers kitchen and bath remodels, wood floor refinishing, patio and sunroom additions, and is a GAF-certified roofing contractor. And Tri-County Restoration can handle new construction for that home you've always dreamed of. Call Tri-County Restoration, 601-856-2530, or visit our website, tcr.ms. That's tcr.ms.
All right, final segment. We're here with Aaron Rice from Mississippi Justice Institute. Aaron, I wanted to talk to you about red flag laws. We don't have enough time. You said you weren't really paying attention to these things.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, as of now, they're really I didn't realize they're in about 17 states.
Really?
But this is the idea that the government needs to kind of need to give you a once-over, see if you're qualified to own a gun.
Yeah.
And obviously, the concern is there could be just horribly arbitrary metrics for that,
oh, yeah.
including – you know, what you posted on social media,
yeah.
all these kinds of things, they're coming too. So
wow.
I don't know, hopefully that won't become it. You would think that Mississippi would stand firm in that, but
yeah.
as we're talking today, you realize that Mississippi can be short-sighted on a lot of things itself. So, real quick, in just the last few minutes we got left, y'all did some work for a guy that was trying to sell veggie burgers here, and
yeah.
the state had a problem with using the term burger
yeah,
if it's vegetable.
Sure. Yep. So the state legislature passed a law. And you're talking about being short-sighted. I mean, we passed this unanimously. I mean, unanimously in the House and the Senate, and it basically said you cannot call any product that's not meat. So if it's plant-based, and they even wrote in there insect-based, which is not an issue, and then they also made a big deal about lab-grown meat,
yeah.
which is you know not even commercially viable right now. But they kind of use those as the as kind of the PR effort all about this. I mean, really, the only product that is on the market right now and actually competing with meat is plant-based products. You know, just veggie burgers like you know that
right.
you've seen in the grocery store forever. And so they said you can't use plant-based products and insect-based proteins and lab-grown products and call them meat.
Boy, this is making me hungry.
I know. Meat or meat food products. And the statute defined meat food products pretty vaguely. I mean, in my opinion, it's very hard to tell what a meat food product is. And it even had language in there about being, customarily associated with meat and things like that.
Was the problem with this, was it the word burger or was it the word meat?
Well, so the law just said meat or meat food product, okay? And then a proposed rule was then implemented that would have been the regulation that would have implemented the statute. And it literally said, I mean, you can't use words that are customarily associated with meat. It had this vague language in there about doing things like that. And now it actually said, and people get confused about this because the proposed rule did say that you can use words like vegan, veggie free, or you know, meat free, veggie, and all that. But it also said you cannot use words customarily associated with meat. So, I mean, that would mean
so
you cannot say
burger.
You cannot say veggie burger. You could say veggie, I don't know, disc or something.
Yeah, you can't. Probably couldn't even use patty.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and it was so broad. I mean, you know, customarily associated with meat. I mean, to me, I think of like delicious and, you know, and just, you know, I don't know. Greasy or whatever. I mean, think words like that. So I can't say delicious. I mean, it was a very just not well thought out, not only statute, but also the implementing regulations. So,
and this is pretty much, we only got about a minute left. This is largely kind of a, you know, an industry protection thing. One of the things that drives me nuts about these things is it treats the consumer like they are just abject idiots.
Yeah, yeah.
You just, if we don't protect you from this, you're going to be tricked by a veggie burger.
That's what they were saying. And I do not believe that at all. I mean, we don't know of any case of a customer saying, "Oh, I'm so confused. I accidentally bought a veggie burger and it was the end of the world. I was getting a burger." You know, the other side, the government claimed that, "Oh no, we weren't protecting. There was an outcry of consumers that were worried about this. And it's like, "Oh, really?"
Yeah.
I'd like to see that evidence.
That's some first world problems right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that was interesting. And so did you prevail in that?
So we filed a lawsuit. The government has not even responded to the lawsuit yet. Their deadline to do that has not come up. But we're representing a company that is actually based in Chicago, but they sell their product here in Mississippi. And they say 100% vegan on all of their boxes. And so they sell things like kind of like a hamburger product and other products. All of them say 100% vegan on them. And so, you know, we want our customer to be able to use the word burger and not have to change their label just because they're selling it in Mississippi.
Right. Well, people remember that. I know may not be a lot of fans of veggie burgers, but should be as far as freedom.
I should say real quick, too, this is a free speech issue is
right,
what it is.
Exactly. Aaron Rice, Mississippi.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.